Well, greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabel, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 80 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on the fluoride deception when we come back. Hey, let me ask you this. What do you think's wrong with the Ten Commandments? Well, it's obvious that something is wrong with the Ten Commandments because they've been banned from our public schools, they're banned from our public institutions, and we have banned them from our national consciousness. Now, instead of these 10 simple time-tested laws, we see the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto. And they're teaching these 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto in our public schools, in our public institutions, and now we've made them a part of our national psyche. And I contend this is a pretty radical change in our political and moral outlook over the past 50 years. For instance, are you aware that your daughter couldn't receive an aspirin in your public school without your consent? But she can have an abortion arranged through that same public school nurse without even your knowledge, much less your consent. That's why I contend that the solution to this moral perversion and national insanity is to go back to what worked. Let's go back to the Ten Commandments and the Mosaic Law. You know, our founding fathers practiced and advocated the Ten Commandments. They even put 22 principles of that law into our federal constitution. And there's at least one school left in America that still teaches this entire Mosaic Law, the Ten Commandments, and all 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments, as well as the penalties, and the 33 benefits that we receive for their observance. Now, you know every law has a penalty. You don't have to know what the penalty to the law is to suffer from its effect. So whether you call this the Mosaic Law, the Law of God, the Common Law, or Natural Law, or Karma, or something else, it's automatic. And it works just like AIDS, herpes, and VD, which just happen to be the natural penalties for adultery. Now, if you'd like more information, why don't you call and order my free General Law CD package? That's the place to start. It's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. And remember, it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free, and you can call and order one right now. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, go to the website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click on to the email. Send me an email request for that free General Law CD package. Once more, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Do it right now before you forget. All right, we're talking about fluoride, the fluoride deception. We're not talking so much about how bad fluoride is for you. There's lots of information out there about fluoride and what it does to you, why it's bad, and what you ought to do about it, and all kind of political solutions, you know, who to vote for, and so on, if that's the vein you want to get on. This story that we're revealing to you this week has to do with the origins of fluoride in our water supply. It's the Manhattan Project, the atom bomb. Now, it wasn't just the atom bomb that put it into our water, but a combination of the potential lawsuits that were going to come down after World War II that required some innovative thinking. And so we took a look last time at the innovative thinking of a guy named Keogh or something like that. I forgot exactly how to. Harold Hodge was one of them. Then over here in Chapter 8, there was a guy by the name of, see if I can find his name here for you, Keogh, K-E-H-O-E. And he ran an outfit called the Kettering Laboratory, and I reported on that last time. And we talked about this thing of human guinea pigs, and the purpose behind this whole experimentation after World War II was to develop a modality or a methodology whereby we could defeat the lawsuits that were going to come down from millions of Americans who had been damaged by this fluoride in the manufacture of the atomic bomb. So Hodge and Keogh went to work on the problem, and they solved it. To this day, if you've got damage from fluoride, you can just put your head between your knees and kiss her goodbye because you're not collecting any money. And that's because they came up with a very, very subtle genius program or solution. And last time we showed you what it was. We obfuscate the issue by putting so many studies out there that no one can come in and testify as to what the facts are. Because, you see, as soon as you come in and testify that you've been damaged by fluoride, I come in with a witness that testifies that the fluoride that's found in this guy's neighborhood is within federally prescribed guidelines from the Environmental Protection Agency approved by Congress. 3 parts per million. And, in fact, your neighborhood is even safer right outside the DuPont gates because it's only 2 parts per million. See, and then whenever the parts per million rise, well, then that industry goes to Congress and they have them raise it. Or they go to the EPA or the FDA or whatever government agency is regulating it, and they just up it. So if you've got too many PCPs, you know, or PCBs in your neighborhood. Congress just allows, they raise the allowable limit from 5 to 10 or 10 to 20 or whatever they need to make sure that you're always within those standards. So they set the standards high for business and industry, trade, commerce, business, and industry. Now, we don't want to pay any claims. So you walk in and say, but look at my bones. Well, I've got all this fluoride in me, and my bones are breaking, and my teeth have fallen out, and I'm just a physical wreck. And they come back and say, okay, but that's not our fault. No, sir, that's not our fault. We're within the prescribed guidelines. We're doing everything the government requires. Then, let's suppose for the sake of our discussion here, you can prove that there was this terrible accident. And that they had this meltdown, like Three Mile Island, and all of this fluoride got out, and that's when it happened. And then all of a sudden, you get another expert witness comes in. He says, well, I examined this guy over here, and yeah, he does have fluoride, but it's well within the tolerable limits of physical endurance, and there isn't any reason why this guy should claim any compensation for it. You see, in law, you have to prove that the guy did it, or he's guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. In a civil case, we have a little lesser standard. We call it with the preponderance of the evidence. So whatever expert you bring in, I'm going to bring in an expert who's going to testify to exactly the opposite. And so the net result is you can never get a favorable jury verdict. And if you get a favorable jury verdict, which happens sometimes, then the other side goes back, like this guy Keogh did, and they start new studies so that they can obfuscate the issue even more. I'll show you that as we progress along. So the bottom line is you're fighting a losing battle. You're not going to collect anything. I always tell my students when we walk in, are you on the right side or the left side of the issue? First thing we have to decide here before we file suit is which side of the issue are you on? If we can decide, yeah, we're on the right side of the issue. All right, now we got to ask, does this defendant have deep pockets? You know, you can win a judgment, but what value is the judgment if you can't collect on it? So once we decide that, well, yeah, you're on the right side of the issue, but you can't collect a dime, what's the point in suing? So, you know, you got to use your head when we get into litigation, because the litigation is going to take 3 years. And if you're an insurance company and you're skillful at it, you can keep this thing in litigation for 7 years. And the reason that we do that is to run you out of money. See, what we're going to do is break you. And so my job then is to file motion upon endless motion and get continuance upon endless continuance and to bring in all kinds of obfuscations. And to bring in expert witnesses and to constantly bring you into depositions and discovery and interrogatories and admissions and anything that I can to take up time and cause a lot of expense. Obfuscate, deny it, litigate, endless litigation. And then if you can stay with me and it's all said and done, we get to the end and we're ready to go to trial, we walk in and we say, okay, well, we'll just pay you. We couldn't beat you, so we'll just pay you. So we pay you, and then that eliminates case precedent for the next guy. And he has to start all over again just like you did and start and spend 7 years or 4 years or 3 years in litigation. And then, you know, 99 times out of 100, we'll run you out of money. We'll break your will to resist. There was a guy down in Bay City, Mississippi or Louisiana. I forget which side of the border Bay City's on. I think it's Mississippi. And Hurricane Katrina knocked his house down. And he went to litigation, you know, with Allstate, I believe it was. And Allstate, you know, they wouldn't pay him. They said, hey, this is flood damage, and we ain't paying for floods. And so litigation went on and on. And so he got all of his ducks in a row, and he got to the point where he's ready to go to trial. And when he settled the claim, he settled it for $217,000 less than he said that he thought he was entitled to, because he was just tired of the litigation. Those were his words, is, I'm just tired of this litigation. So I went ahead and settled with him for $217,000 less. Now, here's the objective. See, I'm an old-timey claims adjuster, and I can tell you what our motivation is. Let's suppose you come in and you've got a $500,000 claim. And I look at it and I say, well, the guy's got a legitimate $500,000 claim. I should, just as a matter of just moral character, just say, look, we owe you $500,000, here's your check. But I'm working for the insurance company. And the insurance company has hundreds and thousands of these kind of claims. So, you know, this adds up to a lot of money. If we could shave $10,000 off of your claim and just pay you $490,000, we'd save $10,000. Well, if you've got 1,000 claims like that, that's $10 million. We could save the company $10 million by settling 1,000 claims for $490,000 instead of $500,000. So the insurance company does this. In order to encourage me, the claims adjuster, to screw you down as low as we can get it, they say to me, well, Gordon, we'll pay you 50% of whatever you can save us. So if I can trim you down $10,000, I get $5, the insurance company saves $5. If I could screw you out of $20, I get $10, the insurance company gets $10. Well, in this case, this guy said he settled for $217,000 less. Well, the claims adjuster got paid 50% of that, so the claims adjuster made about $108,500. By dragging this thing out for 2 years, this guy's house is knocked down. He's living in a FEMA trailer. and he wants to get his life back to normal. If we'd have given him this $500,000, you know, the week after Katrina hit, he would have had his house built and done and had been living in it, and everybody'd be happy. The reason that the Gulf Coast still isn't rebuilt and won't be built for years is because we're going to drag this out for as long as we possibly can and screw you people out of as much money as we possibly can. That's just the insurance industry way of making money and profit, or of maximizing the profit. All right, now, we want to collect your premiums, but we don't want to pay out any claims. So in an industry like, let's say, aluminum, we want to manufacture and sell aluminum. But in the process, we've got to use fluoride, which is a dangerous toxic chemical, which is going to cause physical injury to our workers. Now, we don't want our workers to know that this stuff causes physical injury, because if they do, they won't work in the industry. And if they work in the industry, they'll want a whole lot more money. You know, if you're going to work in a coal mine, you want more money than if you're flipping burgers at McDonald's. All right, so the industry says, well, we want to show these workers that this is perfectly safe and harmless. And so they come in with scientific studies, and they say, well, our plant is the state of the art, and it's perfectly safe, and that induces you to work there. All right, now, you work there for a while, and you come down with a lung disease. Say you got fibrosis in the lungs, or bronchitis, or asthma, or you got black lung, or whatever, you know, whatever. You go to the doctor, he says, okay, here's what your problem is. And you say, well, God, the only place I could have got that was on the job. So you come in, you say, hey, boss, I've got black lung, bronchitis, asthma, I've got this wrong with me, and you're the proximate cause of my injury. Sign here so I can collect on my benefits. Now, the employer, he says, oh, I don't want to do that. If I do that, I got to pay for a bunch of that. So he denies it. No, see, our plant is perfectly safe, state of the art. Why, we're approved by OSHA and the EPA and the FDA and all these government alphabet industries and agencies, and it isn't us. The insurance company doesn't want to pay either. And so you get drug into this endless litigation, which 99 times out of 100 ends up you don't get paid jack diddly squat. Now, here's this guy, Kehoe. This is chapter 15 called Buried Science, Buried Workers. Doctors bury their mistakes. And that's what science is all about. Science is out here. Now, science is a whore. And a whore is in business to make money. Now, the whore would like to get $100 a trick, but she'll take 50 if she can't get 100. And, you know, if she can get 200, she'll take 2. Scientists are the same way. You can buy any scientific study that you want. You can buy any expert witness that you want. I'm in the business. I'm telling you. If I've got a case, and let's suppose that you're claiming that you've got black lung and you got this black lung down in a coal mine, I will come in with an expert witness who will testify that you could not possibly have gotten black lung in that mine because of all the safety procedures that are put in place there. No, expert witnesses are paid whores. Scientists are paid whores. Now, that doesn't mean that all scientists are paid whores. I told you when we started this discussion, the lady Phyllis Melanix, she told the truth. She's a scientist. She did her studies, and she came out and told the truth. And you know what she got paid for it when she told the truth? She got fired. She lost her job. So I'm here to tell you, if you're a scientist and you tell the truth about fluoride, you're going to get fired. It's just that simple. And so to keep from getting fired, you just write up whatever report your boss wants, which is why I'm telling you that, and all you listeners out there, you can buy whatever science you want. And that's what the pharmaceutical industry does. You see, they do a study. They hire scientists. They pay them big bucks. And the scientist writes up the report that the corporation wants, Monsanto, Merck, Pfizer. And they submit that to the FDA. The FDA takes the report because it's got all the scientific backing. And the scientists are all licensed, bonded, insured. All right, now you can come into court and you can say, well, here's what happened to me, and here's scientist Joe Smedley, and he says that I've been injured by this fluoride. I will bring in some more scientists who will say, no, he wasn't injured by the fluoride. He was injured by his own cigarette smoking. He was injured by, and we'll testify. We'll come into court. And you're saying, well, that's perjury. No, it isn't even perjury. We've already got the studies. We've already bought and paid for these studies, these lying, false studies. There's true studies and there's lying, false studies. Which one do you want to buy today? Which side of the issue are you on today? What is it that you need today? We'll deliver whatever it is you want. So in law, when I need an expert witness, I go to Lawyers Alert, and they got a section in there on experts. And there's companies out there that provide experts, and I call the company and say, okay, here's the kind of case I've got, and here's the expert I need. And you know what they ask me? Which side of the issue are you on? I say, I'm on the left side of the issue. Okay, let's recommend Dr. So-and-so and so-and-so and so-and-so. These guys are all professors. They're all scientists, and they got letters after their names and hold professorships. And hell, for $600 a day, I can have these guys. I got to pay their expenses. I fly them in from Berkeley, California, pay their expenses, $600 a day. They'll get on the witness stand, tell you anything I want them to say. It's a paid professional whore. Nothing more, nothing less. Any judge tell you the same story. And the other side will do the same thing. As soon as I call in an expert, he'll just go hire a paid whore and come in here and counter that particular paid witness. And that's what science is all about. Now, it shouldn't be, but that's what it's all about. So in the controversy over fluoride, looking back at the history of it over here, here we got this Dr. Kehoe. Listen to this. Kehoe pointed to another goal. He said, creating an unassailable medical orthodoxy that would block scientists from serving as effective expert witnesses in future court cases. And his laboratory's earliest efforts to control scientific information about fluoride had almost borne fruit in the Martin trial, he remarked. But the surprise appearance of the Englishman, Dr. Donald Hunter, had upset the apple cart. So opposing counsel overcame this obstacle by the importation of an expert who, with some charity, may be judged to have been susceptible to the thrill of participating in a grandstand play, or perhaps of aiding an aggrieved family, wrote Kehoe. The only solution was a fresh batch of medical experimentation and scientific data, so overwhelmingly persuasive, both in itself and its dissemination, as to render futile any efforts to combat it. The new Kettering research would pile negative evidence upon negative evidence, said Kehoe. This would result in such difficulty in finding a competent and credible expert witness as to thwart the attempts of counsel to make a case for any potential plaintiff, he added. Did you understand that? Let me explain it. In the Bidda case against Reynolds Metals, and the plaintiff brought in an expert from England. The expert from England says, well, over in England, we don't use this fluoride because it's a deadly toxin that kills Englishmen and blah, blah, blah. And he won the case. So industry looks at that and says, oh, my God, we lost a case. We've got to put a finger in the dike, or we're going to have water running through this and make a big hole, and pretty soon the whole dike will fail. So they go over here to the Kettering Institute, and they go to Kehoe, and they say, what are we going to do? And he says, well, we need a whole new round of studies. We'll get a bunch of experts in here, and we'll pay these experts, you know, like Phyllis, you know, this lady that we started the series about, and she'll go out here and she'll test and she'll do all these neat things, and then we'll take her study, and then we'll put another study up next to hers, and then we'll put another study, and we'll have six studies on one side and six studies on the other side. And what that means is total nullification. Nobody can believe anybody, because one guy says cigarette smoking is harmless, and the next guy says cigarette smoking causes lung cancer. And that's the way they did the cigarette and the tobacco industry. That's the way they did asbestos. And that's the way they are now doing fluoride. There are so many studies out there that tout the benefits of fluoride and how wonderful and how good this stuff is. And then there's all these studies on the other side tell you how bad it is. You know, honest to God, as a plumber, you don't know what the hell to believe. Now, as old Dan Rather would say, you know, follow the money. So what you're looking at here is, well, who funded these studies? So when you see the National Cancer Institute fund a study, then you know that study is false. See, it doesn't take you very long to figure out who's funding the study, and I'll tell you, Monsanto funded the study. So you know that GM seeds are good if Monsanto funded the study. On the other side, you know, if it's one of these outfits that's knocking GM seeds, you can say, well, that study is phony because they're knocking it. See? So don't think for a moment that science is true and honest and that everything that comes out of science is beyond reproach. Science is just a paid whore. Nothing more, nothing less. And Kehoe over here was a genius in being able to figure this out. Now, there's a bunch of pictures in here of all these World War II, and the reason I said black the other day, and here's former fluoride workers James Southern, Ralph Deadweiler, and Orpheus Coggins at the Hershaw Chemical Company secret World War II era arenas, Area C, plant in Cleveland, Ohio. All three of these guys are black. Here's another guy down here, Hershaw worker, Alan Hurt, another black guy. If you take a look at the pictures in here, what you see here is this disproportionate share of black workers who are being killed and injured by these experiments that are running through World War II. And then pretty soon, you know, you start to get racist and you say, looks like to me that maybe these guys are picking on blacks. All right, now listen to this. It goes on a little bit further here. It's called Eating Country Ham on page 192. Listen to this. Perhaps the fluoride workers most badly treated have been the women and the men who won the battle for the Cold War, who did our dirty work laboring in the satanic mills that were America's nuclear bomb factories. And since 1949, an estimated 600,000 workers have worked in these government atomic plants, with tens of thousands more employed by private industrial corporations who built the bomb during the early years of the Manhattan Project. But while the U.S. spent an estimated $5.5 trillion to build nuclear weapons, we hid the health risks of working in those factories. We denied workers additional hazardous pay. And then we fought those very same men and women in court if they became injured or ill and filed for compensation. Now, the government told these workers that they had no illnesses, and noted Clinton-era Energy Secretary Bill Richardson said, these were the heroes and heroines of the Cold War that built our weapons, and then we turned our backs on them. You know, this is what's going on over in Iraq. So these guys go over there to Iraq, and they're all gung-ho, and they're all patriotic, and they want to go over there and serve their country, and so they do. And they get injured for whatever reason. And then they come back, and they can't get medical help. Now, the president jumps up and says, geez, I went to Congress, and I asked for more money for the disabled American veterans. So they say, well, we can't fault the president. He's asking for more money. Then the senators and the representatives get there, and they say, they pound the podium and jump up and down, paw the ground, bite the bushes. We need to give more money to our veterans, and we need to do this, and we need to do that for these great heroes. All right, so we can't blame the representatives and the senator. So the president and the reps and the senators, you know, they're all talking about it. But somehow or another, when you get down on the bottom line, the money doesn't get appropriated. The president doesn't sign the bill. And the VA gets overstaffed, or they are understaffed and overextended, and they can't provide the care. They did the same thing here with these vests. You know, they're talking about these bulletproof vests. And so a lot of guys, they were buying bulletproof vests for their sons and daughters over in Iraq and sending it to them, you know, in a care package. And then the Army said, oh, no, you can't do that. Why, that's not government approved. Well, we won't allow you to do that. Then they had one vest over there that wasn't as good as another kind of vest, but the government had a contract. Now, listen, here's the way this payola works. Somebody comes in and they bribe somebody. It could be senators and representatives or whatever. And they sign a contract for $50 million to provide these vests. Somebody else comes along and they got a better vest. Well, listen, we can't nullify this $50 million contract because somebody came up with a better technology. So, you know, common sense would tell you we need to scrap the old technology and take on the new technology. Just take the $50 million, scrap it, and spend another $50 or $100 million and buy the better vests. No, can't do that. So they had inquiries, and they had tests, and the Army went out, and they tested, and they said, well, this one that we bought is just as good as or better than. Our tests show that it's better than this other one. And then the other side goes out, and they show tests, and their tests show that theirs is better than the other one. See how this works? And so the bottom line was the inferior body armor vest is what's furnished to the troops in Iraq. And it's going to be that way until this company or the payola or the bribes or whatever it is run out. Technology be damned. Now, that's the way that game is played, so let's understand it. So if you're a soldier over in Iraq, the reason that you can't have the good vest and you have to use the substandard vest, it's just money. It has nothing to do with you personal, son. You know, it's just money. There's money to be made here, and this war is the proximate cause of profits and making money. And if you get killed over there or injured, you're just, well, it's too bad. But, you know, it's the breaks of the game. And you're doing it for the national economy. That's what the real bottom line is. We need the war to maintain the national economy. Hey, I'm about halfway through here, and I got to tell you, you know, so that we can keep up with the FCC and with all of these various government agencies around the world, you know, that require that we identify ourselves and tell you who we are and where we're from and all this information. So stand by here while I remind you that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. For more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools in all. And the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by invitation or prearrangement only. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated every week. It has our radio log schedule and archives that can be accessed through the website as well. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. That's for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do it 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School at 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements or recommendations that we give out don't mean that the authors or publications that we endorse or recommend are going to reciprocate by endorsing and recommending the Law Hour editorial review. The reason for that is that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian. They could be racial or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint isn't necessarily endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine, they're my alum. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or of this local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to my website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about fluoride and the genius behind this fluoride campaign. Because remember, they have sold this fluoride now to America. It's in our water supply, half the water supply in the country. It's a deadly toxic poison. They put it in your toothpaste, and your dentist flushes your mouth out with fluoride, and he recommends it and tells you that it's good for you, and so does every government agency. They all tell you it's good for you. And, of course, then on the other side, there's all these guys who say, oh, no, it's bad for you, and here's why. Now, why is it that the government and Pepsodent and the dentist and all these people are all for fluoride? It's to prevent lawsuits. Bottom line, to prevent lawsuits. Has it worked? Beautifully. Beautifully. Not one person in 1,000 gets paid any compensation for the injuries that they receive from fluoride or from the industries that turn it up. Not one in 1,000 is getting paid. And the one in 1,000 is going to have to fight tooth and tongue to get paid. And there are some people getting paid off the record, out of court, in out-of-court settlements. When we can't beat you and when we can't come up with another solution, we can't outlast you and you live longer than you're supposed to, then we'll pay you in an out-of-court settlement. And that's to keep anybody from coming up, you know, or any cases called precedent-setting cases could be entered into the law books. All right, with that in mind, Paducah Joe Harding was one of those workers toiling in the Kentucky fluoride gaseous diffusion plant from 1952 until 1971 when he was fired without insurance, without disability, and without benefits. A voice in the wilderness, Harding fought to tell the world that the United States nuclear bomb plants were poisoning their workers. In 1950, one of the federal plutonium injectors, Dr. Joseph Hamilton, had worried that proposals to use U.S. prisoners in more human radiation experiments had a little of the Buchenwald touch. Joe Harding had a similar thought. In a letter written shortly before his death in 1980 and entered into the congressional record 20 years later, Harding wrote to the Department of Energy about the nation's nuclear weapons program. He said, it seems that Union Carbide Nuclear Company, all other corporations that are involved, the AEC, the Department of Energy, the Federal Security, FBI, Justice Department, can do as they please, trample on the public and not be touched. Harding noted, and he concluded, the Germans had a name for this kind of setup. They called it Nazism. All right, so here's a whistleblower. And occasionally these guys come up. So what do we do to neutralize these whistleblowers? What do we do to keep these guys from blowing the lid off of an explosive situation like Abu Ghraib or Guantanamo or like the recent one, the CIA destroying the tapes of their Chinese water torture? All right, there's a protocol that is used to discredit these people, to whitewash it. There's a modality that we use. Listen to this. Well, Harding died of cancer the same morning that a Swedish TV crew arrived for an interview. At the end, weeping sores marched across Joe Harding's body. He struggled to breathe. His stomach and 2 feet of his intestines had been removed. Bony outgrowths, the classic symptoms of extreme fluoride poisoning, sprouted painfully from Harding's palms and joints. The Department of Energy lawyers fought Joe Harding until the end, at one point blaming his sickness on a combination of smoking cigarettes and eating country ham. After Harding died, the government battled his widow, Clara, in court. Remember the technique? You deny it. First of all, you shut up, and then you deny it, and then you fight tooth and tongue and make the other side prove it. Now, here's this guy's Harding. Here's his problem. He has to prove a connecting link between the fluoride in his plant, in his workplace, and the proximate cause of his death. It ain't going to happen, kids. He cannot prove that the fluoride in that plant caused his illness and caused him to die. Can't be done. Now, do we know what did it? Sure, because there's lots of people in that plant, and lots of those people are dying the same way. But on his death certificate, it does not say died from fluoride poisoning. It says he died from cancer. Okay, well, what caused the cancer? Well, we don't know. That's where science is today. Science says, we don't know. We don't know what causes cancer, and we don't know how to cure it. It's incurable, and we have a treatment for it. All right. Now, I've said this before. I said, well, who in his right mind would take his car into a shop? And the mechanic says, I don't know what's wrong with your car, and I don't know how to fix it. But I'm a mechanic, and I will work on your car for $25 an hour until you go broke. Who in his right mind would leave his car with such a nitwit? And yet, we go to our doctors. Now, you ask your doctor, what causes cancer? He says, I don't know. Ask your doctor, do you have a cure? He says, no, but we have a treatment. And for $100,000, I will treat you until your insurance runs out. Or until you die, whichever comes first. There was a lady in the Bible, and she'd been to the doctor. She probably had some kind of a cancer in the blood. What do they call that? Leukemia. And so she saw Jesus coming down the road. She said, well, I've heard about this guy. He can actually heal people. And she says, I think this is the Son of God. I think this guy is an angel, or he's God or somebody. She runs up to this guy. He's in a crowd. And she touches the hem of his garment, and she's immediately healed. And Jesus made this comment. He said, who touched me? His disciples are sitting there saying, wait a minute, boss. You're being thronged by about 100 people here. And you're asking, who touched me? Hell, there's 20 people touching you right now. And he says, no, not that. Not that. He said, I felt virtue leave my body. I felt power go out of my body. So it went into somebody. You know, whether you call this energy or whatever, you know, body energy. And so this woman confessed, and she said, well, it was me. I did it. And so he said, well, blessed are you, and be healed and go on home and have a good day. Now, she had spent everything that she had on the doctors. That's a part of the protocol. That's a part of what goes on in life. You know, you people go to the doctors, you spend everything you've got, and they take everything you've got. You wait until you don't have any more money or any more insurance, and they'll show you where the door is. They'll show you the door. Well, that's what happened to this guy here. And this guy, his name is Harding, isn't it? Let me see if I can find the page here. I lost my place here. And he's got eating country ham disease. And so they said, well, eating country ham and smoking is what caused this. Well, listen, boys and girls, there's people that eat country ham and they smoke, and they don't come down with ailments like this guy's got. So it doesn't take a real genius to figure out that if you've got a number of people that are working in the same plant and they come up with the same illness over here, there's something in this plant that's causing that. Now, if you go back to the research that was done, you'll find out that what's being done here is being done by the fluoride. See, we've got studies, but we bury those studies under national security protocol, and we hide them so that you can't get them on discovery. Let me tell you, I'm a fair to middle and old country lawyer, and I'm telling you, you can't get that on discovery. You ain't going to get it. It's a national security interest. Now, there's some protocols that you can go through, and there's a lot of hoops that you can jump through, and you can get an in-camera inspection, and you can get the judge to look at this, and, you know, you can get a witness to testify to some of it, and blah, 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 blah. But I'm telling you that this guy Kehoe and Hodge did their homework, and they did a good job. They have, through national security, by use of the government and industry combined in a fascist conspiracy, they've been able to bury tobacco and asbestos and spraying overhead chemtrails and fluoride. And leaded gasoline. And the list goes on and on and on. I mean, off the top of my head, I can think of probably 6, 8, or 10. I mean, if I sat here and did a research project, I could probably find 50 of these kinds of toxins and poisons that are killing us every day, giving us disease. The reason we got 99% of us sick and 1% of us symptom-free, that's up from 60% that were well or symptom-free and 40% that had symptoms, you know, in 1917. Not that I could come up with 50 of those kinds of toxins. Sodium nitrate, MSG, aspartame. On and on it goes. Now, what that boils down to is that you and I have to then individually take a look at aspartame and say, oh, my God, I've got to watch out for aspartame. Wait a minute. I've got to watch out for leaded gas, tobacco, sodium nitrate, blah, 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 blah. You got to retrain yourself in what you're eating and your lifestyle, or it's going to kill you, just like it did this guy here. If you're working in a certain industry over here, you know, in your own self-interest, you might want to leave there. You know, if you're living in a certain geographical location, like, you know, downwind from a DuPont chemical plant, you know, you might want to move. You know, there's more than one Love Canal. You know, there's more than one of these PCB sites that we have here in Missouri. I forgot the name of the town, but that little town over here in Missouri someplace, and they had these PCPs or PCBs. I don't remember which one was which. Anyway, they had to abandon the whole damn town. It was so toxic. And you probably remember the story about Love Canal. That was up in New York. It was a toxic waste dump from some chemical plant from World War II or some era along that time frame. And so they had to abandon Love Canal, you know. And so then they came up with this Environmental Protection Agency. The government creates this agency over here, which is designed to do what? Obfuscate the issue. It's a place for you to send your complaints that never get acted on and never get resolved. That's what these government agencies are designed to do. It's a place to vent your frustrations, to vent your anger, to write your letters, and, hey, we'll take care of everything. Hey, we're going to take care of everything. Just sit back and relax. We'll take care of everything. Nothing will get done. Nothing's going to change. But we're going to tell you that it's going to get changed. And that's where you veterans are. See, the president says, hey, we're going to straighten out this problem at Walter Reed Hospital. We're going to straighten out the VA. Now, they've been promising that for 5 or 6 years. And the amount of money that it would take to treat all of you veterans, hell, the amount of money to treat all you veterans combined wouldn't run that war over there for a week. So if they just took a week's worth of war over there and spent it on you vets, they'll take care of you in fine shape. Not going to do that. They're not going to do that. Let me repeat. They're not going to do that. They haven't done it in the past. They ain't doing it today. And ain't any reason for you to expect them to do it in the future. So pressured by union groups and shamed by an ocean of tears, Congress finally enacted legislation in October of 2000 that set up a mechanism for compensation of up to $150,000 per injured atomic worker. But the Energy Employees Occupational Illness Compensation Act largely sidestepped the issue of fluoride poisoning. And although a federal study of former bomb program workers' health found that respiratory diseases and mental disorders were widespread in the Oak Ridge K-25 gaseous diffusion plant, there was no mention of a medical link to fluoride, at least for the purposes of workers' compensation. Now remember, the buried Kettering dog study had specifically linked fluoride to such serious lung problems, while Kaj Rohom and Harold Hodge had each suspected fluoride's role in central nervous system disorders. A link confirmed in animals by the laboratory studies of Dr. Phyllis Mullinex at the Forsyth Dental Center in the early 1990s. Now, I'm not aware of any nuclear worker cases that have successfully been compensated for fluoride exposures, said Dr. Melavinskaya, a scientist at the Department of Energy-funded Worker Health Protection Program at Queens College in New York, which helps to diagnose the illness of former atomic workers. We did not pay any particular attention to fluoride. We are concentrating on asbestos, radiation, uranium, plutonium. Fluoride was for good workers, or fluoride rather was good for workers. The scientist even suggested unconsciously mouthing a role written for her a generation earlier by Harold Hodge, Robert Kehoe, and Edward Bernays. It is more like an insufficient supply than an overexposure. That's why it was initially added to toothpaste, Melavinskaya explained. See, we have been programmed all of our lives. Adolf Hitler made this observation. So you tell people a lie long enough, and pretty soon they'll believe it. Pope Innocent, I believe it was the second, said, you give me a kid until he's 7 years old, he'll be a Catholic forever. You take children and put them in the public schools and tell them fluoride is good for you, and you should brush your teeth twice a day with fluoride toothpaste. And that kid will throw himself on the floor in the supermarket and yell and scream and say, buy me fluoride toothpaste. Now, academically, we know that fluoride is bad for us, but we buy it and we use it and we shut up about it because that's the way we have been pre-programmed. Now, if you can get over that, if you can become a recovering Catholic, maybe you can become a recovering fluoride user. And you start doing that by looking for fluoride in your water supply and stop bathing in it and stop drinking it. Okay, that's your first two steps. Now, somebody's going to say, well, I live in this city over here and that's what we got in our water. Well, gee, do tell. Have you ever thought about moving out? I told a guy one time, why don't you move out of Los Angeles? He looked at me like I was suffering from the terminal stupid. He says, well, that's where my job is. You know, as if the only employment in the world is in the Los Angeles basin. And people in Missouri are all retired. There are no workers in Missouri. There are no workers anywhere else in America. The only place for employment is in the Los Angeles basin or where you happen to be working. Hey, kids, there's jobs in Houston, Texas. There's jobs in Dallas. There's jobs in the countryside. There's jobs everywhere. Well, you know, I've got seniority here, and I'm kind of happy living here. And well, hell, you don't have a problem, partner. Stay right where you're at. And brush your teeth twice a day with fluoride toothpaste. Hell, I don't care. Now, you're going to die from it at some point in time. And now somebody's going to write me an email and say, well, you dummy, everybody's going to die at some point in time. Yeah, but I didn't want to die at age 47 from some nasty disease that came from fluoride. Now, of course, these are atomic workers, and these guys are being exposed to very heavy doses. But I want to point out that this guy here that died, he didn't die from fluoride poisoning. He died from cancer, remember? That's what his death certificate says. Did you hear this paragraph? This doctor says, I don't know of anybody who has ever been compensated for fluoride. That's exactly right. That's what the protocol calls for. You can't get compensated for fluoride. You can get compensated for cancer. You can get compensated for 15 other diseases. You cannot get compensated for fluoride poisoning. They don't allow it. Now, that's the real culprit, and that's what's causing your problem. Now, you can get rid of that stuff, remember. You can get that out of your body. You need a naturopath. You need to go to a naturopath and say, no, listen, I think I've got fluoride poisoning, or I need a detox program. So you call us here at the law school and say, well, where do I go to get one of these detox programs? There's a number of guys around. There's one out in California I kind of like. His name is Schmidt, I believe it is. Richard Schmidt, or something like that. It's a German name. Anyway, he's an old-timey naturopath. He studied under Dr. Christopher, the old Mormon herbalist, and he's a pretty good guy, and I kind of like him. This Dr. Joel Wallach could be another one. He's a naturopath. If you just go to the web and you look up Wallach, W-A-L-L-A-C-H, Dr. Joel Wallach, he's married, he's got a wife, she's a doctor too, and they're into health and detoxification and minerals, mainly into supplements, and I don't know if there's so much into detoxification. This doctor I'm telling you about, Schmidt isn't his name, it's something like that, but it's something different. I think his name is Richard something. Anyway, if you call here at the law school, we'll look it up. We'll figure out who it is, give you his name and address, and they can probably clean you out. So if you're sitting there, you know, suffering from Gulf War syndrome, aspartame poisoning, fluoride poisoning, or something of that on that order, and you're sitting there and going, oh, there's nothing they can do for me. Well, hell, you know, if somebody says, there's nothing I can do for you, well, go to somebody else. What you're looking for here, Joe, is somebody that can help you. Wake up, smell the coffee. Well, the doctors, you know, they all say they can't do anything for it. Well, okay, I hear you. If the doctors can't do anything for it, then, Joe, you need to go to somebody that can do something for you. And I just told you, they're called naturopaths, and they're not medical doctors, and they can do something for you, Joe. Because I get tired, you know, sometimes. Stupidity's got to have limits somewhere, doesn't it? There has to be an upper limit. No one's ever asked the question, but Buried Science and Buried Workers is in Chapter 15. And then there, let me give you the book's name and number again. It's called Christopher Bryson. He's the author. And it's The Fluoride Deception. And you can get a copy of it from Brave New Bookstore. They're the ones that sent it to me and said, here, read this. This will frost you. It's called BraveNewBookstore.com. That's the web page, BraveNewBookstore.com. Brave New Bookstore is located at 1904 Guadalupe Street, Suite B, Austin, Texas, 78705. It's just a little hole in the wall. That's not Barnes & Noble. So it's run by a couple of good old boys down in Texas, a couple of young guys. You know, they got their heads up the wrong end, in my view, on most of this. But they want to save you, and they want to inform you, and they want to give you these books, books that you can't get anywhere else. And so I said, well, God bless them anyway. Brave New Bookstore, their telephone number is 512-480-2503. 512-480-2503. If you can't find this book anywhere else, they got it. You can rest assured, government doesn't want you to read it. You may find it at Barnes & Noble. Yeah, I'm about out of time again. So much for the fluoride story. Let me remind you that you have been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. We're open to individuals but by invitation or prearrangement. The law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling us at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Our time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.